Still there.
All right, got all the both Robs. There we go.
Excellent. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How about you?
Good, good. Where are you today?
I'm in D.C. I had some folks coming by the house to take care of a couple things, so I'm on my way in, and some guy just cut me off, and I almost broadsided him, so my brakes work, so whatever else happens today, it's a good day.
Isn't that fun, commuting and trying to talk at the same time? It's not fun. Well, anyway, we'll do the best we can. How was your month, and what's on your mind this morning?
You know, Rob, I think I'll let Sean and those guys kind of take the lead on this, but the thing that I'd like some insights and some observations on, best practices, is Sean and Claudia and Michael have brought in a new person. Given the team's sense of humor, they decided to hire a gentleman named Elvis. And Elvis is like Sean in only the single instance, because I don't know Elvis at all. He is literally fresh out of college, like 4 or 5 days, a couple weeks after graduation, he's here with us. So, like Sean, he's blank slate. You know, I don't have any sense that he has Sean's work ethic or IQ, but in terms of shaping him to handle Supernova, that's really the job that he's been brought in to do and where we're going to start him. So I'd be interested to hear if you were in our position and you had a brand new, fresh face, blank mind, no habits or this or that, how would you get started? What would you be looking for? What would you really want to instill, and what would you do?
Okay. All right, good. Sean, what's on your mind today?
I would echo that from Rob. I mean, this really is, you know, putting us in a position to where, you know, I think, you know, some conversations we've had for what seems like we've been at it last year, we've finally been in a position to hire someone who can essentially run Supernova full-time. You know, getting back to, I mean, he's doing and already has started to begin the prep work. So he's sending out the materials and the agendas. He is also, and this is where I've found, you know, sort of the, I guess more or less the breakdown that, and I'll speak for myself, that I've had in the Supernova is the backlog of follow-up that exists from Supernova. And just the follow-up email that, you know, we're required to send out. You know, we were delinquent in getting those out, you know, instead of, you know, maybe being 24 hours, sometimes they were getting 48 hours. So the other piece that's really been positive to Elvis coming on board is he's preparing a lot of the, you know, what I would call core part of the follow-up portion of the email that then Rob and I can just add in, you know, the details that we actually receive from the call. So that has really started to help in terms of freeing up a lot of time, both pre- and post-call. So we're already starting to see the you know, the fruits of that labor of having an extra body in here and solely dedicated to just managing this process.
So is he scheduling the appointments, confirming the appointments and that stuff or not?
No, I mean, the scheduling... I feel like we have a pretty good handle, and that's essentially on the books with the reoccurring Outlook invite. On the rare instance that we do need to reschedule it, Rob or I personally handle that.
Okay. So he's really working on agendas and executive summaries.
Correct. And the confirmation of the appointments, Rob is really also, you know, we're getting the materials out 24 to 48 hours in advance. So we're typically getting a response from the client, you know, saying that that confirmation is almost essentially, it's confirmed when the agenda is being sent.
Okay. So he is doing something to do with the scheduling. He's sort of backing up.
Yes. And he is, and he's also, when he's sending the email, I mean, this is something that we found at the very beginning when he first started, is we did a poor job of, one, alerting our clients that we had a new person who's on the team. So still to make sure that the clients recognize the email, he is typically sending it from his email, well, from my email on my behalf. So it comes across as me, even though he's sending it directly.
Hey, Sean, can I interrupt? Would it be fair to say that Elvis is at this point invisible to the client?
Yes, he is.
And it may stay that way?
I think certainly for the foreseeable future, yes. Just until we have some degree of confidence that he's going to stick around for more than a few months. I mean, like you said, Rob, this is his first job. He interviewed a couple places, so I think this is the training ground that we're going through to make sure that we could have this plug-and-play body, that if someone came in, we've now shown them what the process is, and I think this is giving us a good, solid template that if he's not the guy who sticks around, we can easily plug somebody else in very, very quickly.
Okay, in terms of Michael, are you on? What's on your mind?
Do you mean just along the topic of the new employee, new Elvis? I think the whole purpose of Elvis is to make sure that we're running Supernova efficiently, the 12-4-2 cycle, but also making sure that it doesn't become cumbersome. It doesn't become, you know, it's what's supposed to help us with our jobs, not become our jobs. And having this extra person is really alleviating. I see some of the things that Sean or Rob had to do, or even Claudia, and it's going to hopefully free them up, to do more, to do things to drive the business itself or to grow the business. And I see it with Claudia in terms of her ability to not focusing on the folders so much, being able to do more of the portfolio analysis, come up with new ideas to grow the business. And he's taken to it very well. Again, just to echo what Sean said, I don't want to get overexcited about it because, again, it is his first job. I'm doing everything in my power to make sure he feels like one of the team. He understands that being on a team like this can afford him a lot of flexibility as well as a lot of growth potential. But it's also very hard to explain that to someone who just showed up on the door out of college. I'm using it more of a way to refine the process so that, as Sean said, if he doesn't work out and he moves on to a different role, we've got it dialed in. We can just basically insert the next person in, or we can continue it on until that new person shows up. So
who actually hired him, and how did you get referred to him, or how did he get referred to you? Where did he go to college? Give me a little background on him.
Sean and Claudia.
He graduated from George Mason University. We were running into some issues with the firm because they wanted to hire a registered person. We had asked them to see if it was possible to hire an unregistered, unlicensed person. And Claudia had interviewed pretty much all of them, or sat in on the interviews. Literally within 5 seconds of meeting a person, Claudia was like, nope, not going to work. And Elvis was the one that she, after asking him a few different questions, had suggested that we give this guy a try.
Okay. So I think it's really important that everybody on the team interview him now, okay, and you really get to know him. And I'm not saying you don't know him, but Rob says he didn't know him. That's not good, okay? Never hire anybody that everybody on the team hasn't interviewed.
We're refining the process in general, so not getting involved or overly committed to someone at this stage, I think, is important, because we can get into a lot of trouble in that respect, because what we're hiring someone to do is very specific. It's not technically client-facing, and to some degree, it's almost an automated process where they know what they have to do. They're making cogs, they're punching a clock, but it's for a very important machine that they're doing it for. So we want to make sure that before we overcommit to someone, that we've got a real process involved.
Again,
I feel like not overcommitting to someone or really getting everyone emotionally invested into it might be more important than everyone liking him right off the bat.
Yeah, well, okay, as your coach, okay, as your consultant, never hire anybody in the future that everybody has an interview. Okay? I don't care what they're doing. I don't care whether they're, you know, that's not the way you do business. You did it, it's fine. It'll work out. But you don't hire somebody for a very tiny job, ever. You hire somebody to be a team member for a long time, and if they leave, that's disappointing, but they have the potential to be a good member of the team. Hiring is a really big deal, and you can't minimize it. I know that you had an intention of making this a very niche thing, but you can damage continuity on the team by people not knowing who he is. It can't be a casual thing, okay? It's okay. You did it. But in the future, if you value my consulting, I've hired many thousands of people and helped many thousands of teams. And it's very important to take your time in hiring and to have everybody interviewed. Everybody should know this. You go into it with the intention of that person staying forever. If they choose not to, that's fine. But the team's intention is to make them an integral part of the team. Okay? So, just FYI, it's just a good best practice. It sounds like Claudia did a nice job, and I'm sure he will work out fine. But everybody has to be vested in a person, and that person has to feel like everybody's vested, and that person will literally have one foot out the door when they step in. That's not good. Okay, next, what would I do? Well, first of all, I told you what I'd do first. I'd interview him, make sure he's the right person. Second, I'd make sure that he understood Supernova. And I'm sure you've done this, but if you haven't, had him read the book, have him read the book.
He did.
Oh, okay, good. Then he should know who's handling the, monthly initiatives that you guys are doing in terms of monthly focus.
We are the team.
Right. Who specifically? Is that Claudia?
Claudia's running that meeting, and then the input from the team collectively. We have that towards the end of the month.
Yeah. Yeah, Claudia's in charge of implementation, so she would be the one that would ultimately be. So he should be briefed on that and understand it. Okay, now that's an educational process because those topics are quite complex. So he should know that if he's working. Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's a really good idea. Well, yeah, it helps him to learn a little bit about the business.
Sure. But if you're relying on him to be helping you create the agenda, he needs to know that, right? He needs to know what that topic is. He has to be comfortable with it. And then when he's helping to initiate the executive summaries, that should be on the agenda. That should be on the executive summary. So that's part of it. Now, I'm a little bit warming up. An executive summary is obviously comes from the meeting, and those meetings are done by you, Sean, and Rob, right?
Correct.
So you write it up. What role does he play? Does he actually send the email, or does he? How does he fit into that?
So the what I'll call the generic, educational topic piece that occurs during the call. We've essentially worked to create more or less a monthly template that summarizes what that topic of discussion was, rather than recreating that every single time. So then he, and then we use the way we're sending these, we're actually sending them using bullet points. So Elvis essentially creates more or less the boiler template of the generic piece of the conversation inside these bullet points, and then Rob and I will then go in, and he'll send that to us, and then Rob and I will then go in and copy, paste that into a new email to the client, and then customize it based upon the conversation that we had with the client.
Okay. Would you do me a favor and send me a sample of an agenda and an executive summary?
Sure.
Yeah. That would be helpful. Because they become so customized, it's very hard to... I understand what you're doing. I'm just... And these should not be long, by the way. You know,
they're
this
not.
Is a...
No.
Yeah. Right. So how many are you doing a day?
Anywhere from 3 to 5.
Okay.
But not every day, correct, Sean? So there are some days in there, Rob, where we've left days to go meet with clients, meet with prospects, work on other things we have to do. And I would say that Sean does 70% of them to 80% of them.
Okay. Do you do the same thing when you meet with a prospect?
In what sense? In terms of a follow-up email and so on and so forth?
Right. Yes. Affirmative.
Yes, we do.
Okay. 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 Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds great. I'm just not sure that there's enough of a job there for a person to do. I'm trying to think of what, I mean, that doesn't sound, 3 to 5 of those a day, and some days not having them, I mean, that's not much work.
Well, and what I think is the intention, Rob, and by the way, your comments about, you know, how we handle him early on do land on me squarely, and it made me think as you were walking through that we are in a sense creating a self-fulfilling prophecy in the fact right. that, you know, he's not going to feel connected, he's not this, he's not that. So I appreciate those comments, and we'll take those and think about how we correct course there. But what I would say is that I think that the idea is that he will continue to evolve. And so what we don't want to do is overload him with too many things right away. I will tell you that I think Sean, and I'm speaking for them now, and Claudia and Michael to a lesser degree are a bit skittish because, frankly, they spent a year cleaning up messes that Tara handled, which, you know, when you say I'm your coach and this is my advice, the last time I didn't follow your advice is when you told me to get rid of Tara and I hung on to her for a year and let her screw up the practice. So that is also duly noted. So I think that there is a bit of, you know, let's baby walk this guy, let's do this, let's make sure he's got this down and that down, and before we turn more things over to him, let's think about how many problems he can create for it. So I do think that there is a little bit of that is slow walking this process some, but I see him eventually being able to, you know, as we get more active in the prospecting and the marketing, he needs to take on a lot of that kind of work. I think that eventually, you know, he ought to be able to start to pull the performance reporting and doing those things because I don't think he still understands all that enough. I don't think anybody has enough confidence and he understands markets and nuances enough to do that. Is that fair, Sean, that you guys are still doing some of that for him?
I mean, we're giving him – we've shown him the templates that we've used in the past, and I mean, he's drawn to that pretty quickly in terms of being able to execute on that. I mean, I think, you know, Rob, I think you're also right. It's Rob Reich. I think you're correct in the, you know, what our goal and objective was. You know, 1242, Rob, is a lot. I mean, it takes a high level of commitment to execute this you know, day in, day out, every single month. And while there are, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days in the month where we're not having the 1242 calls, you know, those other days are jam-packed with, you know, the preparation, the team meetings, making sure that we're, you know, hitting production goals as well. And Elvis is going to be included in those. But a lot of that burden in terms of the prep, the follow-up, you know, that fell very heavily on Claudia and Michael. And what we're seeing right now is having Elvis start to take this over, at least initially, get him acclimated to this process. You know, we're already starting to see the time freed up for Michael to execute fully, you know, handling the operation. And the other big piece, and this is more of a shift that we're seeing this industry start to move towards, is, and maybe this is just Wells Fargo, but I'd love to get your take, Rob Knapp, if you've seen this or heard this from other advisors. But we have an account program which is referred to Asset Advisor. And the Asset Advisor is essentially an account structure that the firm deems as client-initiated, but essentially you're paying a fee for advice in lieu of commission. And the documentation requirements that now exist for that particular type of account have candidly become extremely burdensome to the degree that if we are now shifting every single client towards a discretionary portfolio and a 100% discretionary model. And we're turning away clients candidly right now who are not agreeing to that type of portfolio structure. I just see that this shift that we're seeing right now within our industry is if you don't go that route and you don't go, to this advisory discretion model, this world is going to be very, very difficult to operate under. And that allowing Elvis to take over that portion from Claudia, I think then allows more time for she and I and Rob to now come back and look at portfolio construction, making very timely discussions or timely actions in client portfolios, and then even being more proactive in alerting clients to the decisions that we're making in between the 1242 calls. So that's, you know, sort of as I see the evolution of how Elvis can help this practice. The other piece that we're talking about implementing, and we're still working through the, you know, the kinks here, is how do we allow Rob to become more social media presence? How do we increase that exposure? Rob does a phenomenal job of writing. We just need that message to get delivered to clients on a more regular basis. So what we're trying to get situated here is Elvis getting acclimated to the process, the monthly call routine, again, these pieces that differentiate our practice versus other competitors we have here locally, and then gradually building upon that.
Well, that's enlightening and disturbing, of course. That's too bad. I mean, I believe in fee-based services, but I think there's a place for non-discretionary accounts where you're doing it in combination with the client who may be very vested in the process. Who needs your advice and your backup, but doesn't need, in a portion of the portfolio, of course, can be discretionary. But that's pretty unfortunate.
Rob, just to give you a little color and flavor, sorry to interrupt here, but so, for example, if a client has an individual stock portfolio that's not under the discretionary model, and they're holding, say, 35 to 40 different equities, we have to document that we gave, you know, and we're holding these monthly calls. So you have to document that you gave hold recommendations. You have to give the advice that you gave on each one of the individual securities. Purchase, sale decisions, you know, before it was, oh gosh, you've only done 6 trades in a year. Does this client really, should it really be in a fee in lieu of commission type of portfolio? Now it's come to the standpoint of you did 18 trades in the last 3 to 4 months. Are you trading too actively in the portfolio? I mean, it's a very difficult process to manage and one that is becoming extremely labor intensive in terms of the documentation requirements that are associated with it.
Wow.
Rob, are you seeing anything like that, or is this your reaction would indicate to me that this is a Wells Fargo kind of us paying for the sins of the father some jackass went out and opened up 5 million accounts they weren't supposed to open up and did all kinds of other hinky stuff. Now, you know, they've hit the, overreaction button and we're getting hit right between the eyes with it.
I would say, just based on, now listen, the truth is when I go into offices and I visit, for example, my former Merrill Lynch office, I get the same kind of reaction. You know, you're very fortunate to have retired when you did, Rob, et cetera, that, you know, the burden is amazing in terms of compliance, but not to that degree. Now, I've got calls all day today, and I'll do some checking in. But, you know, I do a lot of business with Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and, you know, pretty broad spectrum of people. But that degree, I mean, if you had my account, you'd be dead. Because, you know, I've got lots of accounts in lots of positions. And, you know, many of them are jointly decisions. I mean, they run a discretionary portfolio. They call it the Malik system, which is where they pick the stocks, but based on momentum and estimates and earnings and our research, and Merrill Lynch's research. But I also do research on biotechnology and robotics and artificial intelligence, and I do a lot of my own research, and I then have them check them out, and then we buy them, and sometimes, you know, sometimes Merrill doesn't even have an opinion on them. So I can understand it'd be a little bit more supervision where they don't have an opinion, but, Not that degree on every position, you know, making a decision on every position every month. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
It's very ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
Think about how many reports you would have written for Warren Buffett on Coca-Cola over the last 4 years.
Well, it's just stupid, honestly. I mean, you're going to write it on every time I decide that I'm going to keep my Amazon position. You're going to write it up. I mean, come on.
It's like once a month I get home and I go, hey, Caroline, I thought about it the whole way home, and I still love you. We're going to stay married in another 30 days.
Right. And you got to report on that every day, every time you talk. Yeah, I would probably, Rob, if you have the ability to push hard against that. I mean, you guys have got to stand up. I mean, compliance cannot run the firm.
I don't know that there's any room to push back on that, very honestly. I think it's more of an adapt, or we get bogged down with compliance paperwork.
I just think you guys have got to. You got to go to your district director and your regional director, and they've got to represent you guys.
Well,
I mean, it's
Rob,
not fair.
Rob, let me give you another overview, and I'm in kind of a delicate situation here because I'm walking through the parking lot, and my voice is actually, Sean, can you give Rob an overview of what is Rumbold anticipated to be taking place within Wells Fargo Advisors, and how that's led to me not being able to find a top guy that used to return my call the same day with a search warrant anymore?
Say it again, Rob.
When Rob's saying that we need to go to our regionals or whoever it is, the challenge that we're having right now with the anticipated changes within the organizational structure and how everybody's scrambling to make sure that they have a chair at the party and my issues with Lincoln.
Rob, I don't know, you're in a difficult situation to maybe even give advice on this, but you've probably even seen some of the Wall Street Journal articles that have circulated around Wells Fargo and Wells Fargo Advisors, and there are rumors, and we're hearing these, you know, percolate even higher here internally, about a collapse of the three different channels that Wells Fargo Advisors has. You know, they have the wealth brokerage services, which is essentially the bank channel associated with the private bank. They then have the independent channel, which is the finance group. And then they have the traditional wirehouse, which is the TCG. And essentially in an effort to save costs, Wells Fargo has been mandated something to the tune of saving $4 billion in internal costs by January 1st of 2020. And one of the first areas of discussion was to collapse the WBS and TCG channels together and essentially, you know, eliminate, you know, double overhead with management. And, you know, that has caused a lot of just uncertainty here over the course of the last 2, 3, 4 months, and ultimately has put us in a position to where, you know, management, I think what Rob is alluding to, isn't essentially, you know, as easily accessible as they've been in previous months.
I would say they're completely non-responsive. I called an ECP, the guy who I used to get a call back from in 2 hours. I called him. I sent him an email. I sent him 3 emails, and in 30 days, I didn't hear from him.
So, that's unfortunate.
I think the only thing these guys are worried about is making sure they have a chair at the party.
Yeah, crisis create, you know, opportunity, but they also create fear, and fear is a big debilitator. It's unfortunate.
I would be less understanding and accepting of it all if I hadn't been there myself before. So I understand where they're at. But I think it makes the notion of, if you were going to fight City Hall, you'd have to first be able to find City Hall and get in the door. You can't find City Hall or get in the front door today.
Well, you know what I mean about fighting City Hall, so you get it.
Yeah, politely, professionally, respectfully, from a common mutual benefit for our clients. But, I mean, you literally, if you said to me today, you know, I'll give you $1,000 if you can get a hold of this, of, you know, the top guy you usually talk to. And if you can't get a hold of him, you got to give me $500. I'd say, yeah, I don't want to get that.
Really? Oh, well, okay. So you guys have just got to work within what you've got. You know, I'm sorry. That just is what it is, I guess. And hold on, and hopefully, you know, whoever takes over at the end will have... The key thing for me is you've got to have people in there that have been in your seat. And those are the people that will fight for you. And if you don't have those people in those seats, then it's very difficult for them to make the case for why, when you're prospecting, you have got to, you can't dictate all the time exactly the way you want to run the money, you know? I mean, there's a reality. You get a guy, let's say you pick up a guy in the pharmaceutical industry. And this guy has got a huge concentrated position in AstraZeneca, right? He also has a lot of information about companies, and he periodically makes investments in those companies and runs a biotechnology portfolio of his own choosing with your advice. And he's achieved a 30% return on that over the last 4 years. You're going to tell him he can't do that, then?
Correct.
That's insane. Because he's a top executive and he's got $20 million with you. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm the guy about all process, you know, process, right? Process, plan, process, and ritual. But there's got to be flexibility when it comes to high net worth clients in terms of, I mean, that guy is incredibly valuable as a source of intellectual capital, too, for you.
Right. You've got to decide, are you here to service your process and rituals or your clients? Which is
your I mean, come on. I mean, I learned as much from my clients as I did from any research.
Amen.
Right? I mean, you learn from your clients. They're in it day to day.
That's why I had guys in all these companies that I'd like the company well enough, I'd get a client inside the company to make sure I knew what was going on. So it, you know, that's part of the game. It's not inside information, it's just intellectual capital. Anyway.
Correct.
I digress. But I think you've got a real opportunity here to be a voice of reason in a world of craziness. They've gone too far. All the firms have gone too far. You did not sell long-term capital. Okay, you did not sell mortgage-backed securities. You did not sell this crap. It's not your fault. Okay?
Right.
You did not open up too many non-people accounts. And they've got to stop blaming us for the problems that have been created by stupid leadership. Anyway, I digress again because it's a point of passion for me. I think the industry has gone crazy.
Well, I think what's going to happen, very frankly, Rob, I think that this is going to stimulate a whole other round of firms losing really good teams that are going to go RIA or something because they say, this is just ridiculous. I can't, you know, be a ping pong in your, you know.
Right. All right, so, Rob, here's my point. Here's my point. Before you guys do that, make your effort, serious effort, to bring reason to things, okay?
Absolutely. I do not say that
I don't take it as, but it becomes the inevitable. And that's not fair. That's not fair to all the people that went ahead of you that built a great firm, right? I mean, you gotta give that legacy a chance. So anyway, so what else? I mean, I know that becomes it becomes almost overwhelmingly the subject of conversation, but you've got to do something about it, or you've got to ignore it, you know?
Yeah, and I would say at this point, our attitude is, let's focus on the things we can control. There are,
right.
If I look at what stands between us and the level of success that we're able to achieve for our clients and for us, I would say that's a 20% factor maybe at the most. Maybe it gets to 30, but it's hell and gone from 50 or 51%. So our attitude is let's keep our heads down and keep focused on where we are, you know, where we have control, where we can change things, where we can impact, and make sure that, you know, once we've done everything, kind of our attitude is this, Rob. Once we've done everything we can do, and we can look at each other and say, we are all doing our jobs as well as we know how to do them, and there's no further room for improvement on our end, then we'll go pick a fight for something else.
Let me spend a minute on the burden of Supernova. I mean, Sean, you made it sound like it was really almost a painful process to do these executive summaries. And just candidly, what makes it so hard?
Candidly, certainly there are days where I have six calls throughout the whole day. And It's a long process. I mean, I sometimes have calls, you know, based upon reschedules that are, you know, back to back to back to back, and getting those out and then having to start the next day with those same, you know, four more calls, they get backed up. And it is somewhat of a difficult process to manage at periods of time.
Really? The key is to not have the six calls, but is that due to, like, vacations and people are on vacation and you only have 4 days to get it done or 3 days to get it done, so you have to put in 6 calls.
Yeah, hey, Rob, this is Rob. I'm going to interrupt you and save us all a whole lot of time and tell you something Sean will never say. Part of it is that in an effort to free me up to do more of the things that I think that I wanted to do and that I needed to do and that, frankly, aren't yielding the kind of results that we would hope that they would, primarily all the time I spend trying to grab ass with the rest of wealth, Sean's taking a massively disproportionate percentage of these calls on his own. So when you look at this call structure, you think it's level, or you think it's divided between three people? Yeah, it's divided between three people, and it's divided roughly, if I had to just guess off the top of my head, it's 70 Sean, 15, 8, 10 Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean is that guy on the team that when you say, hey, look, I need to cover shortstop and third base, he says, yeah, okay, I'm fast, I can do that. Plus, you know, yeah, that won't be a problem. Then you say, oh, could you cover second, too? He says, oh, yeah, shit, I'm left-handed, so going to my left shouldn't be a problem. And if you said, could you think you could do first, too? He may start to ask a question or two at that time, but he may not even say anything yet. Which is, quite frankly, one of the reasons I love him like a brother. That's what we got.
Right.
He covers a lot of my, he covers a lot of my sin.
So is Elvis the answer, or is it Claudia taking more calls, or what? What's the answer? Is there one?
Here's what I think the answer is. I think the answer is that I have to go back and look at where I spent an enormous amount of time in the last 6 months and ask myself two questions. One, did I get any kind of return off of it? And B, to the degree that I got a return, do I need to make the same kind of investment going forward that I made in the past? Because it's kind of like when you first start in this business, right? I mean, you don't know anything, so you're calling on everybody. And then pretty soon you're like, yeah, all the dog groomers will talk to me because I love dogs and they love dogs, but they don't have any money.
Right.
So I'm not going to call them dog groomers anymore.
Yep.
So I think it's going back and having a really candid conversation, knowing that everybody wants the exact same thing.
Right.
And saying to ourselves, you know, Sean, this is disproportionate. Even if you'll never agree with me, we all know that it is. And right now, I think we need to make it more even and more, here's what I would like. I miss, Sean and I aren't in the same office anymore, and now we do a lot of these calls individually. I think we fed off of each other. I know I fed a lot off of him. And I think he got things from me. We're now in separate offices. We do all these calls separately. And frankly, I've started to travel and be gone more now than I have been. And I told Sean, there's times that I feel disconnected from the whole process. So I think that it served, for me personally, it would serve a lot of things. He and I did more of the, you know, top 20 together. Then we looked at the next 20 or 25 and we did rotating things. Because it's all right, you're going to be in France that month. I'll do this one. Then the next month, you'll do that one. And then got he and Claudia doing some of that next year, and then had Claudia doing some of those other things. Because the other thing that I'm thinking a lot about these days is that Sean's going to turn 40 this year, which is the exact same age that he was when he and I joined together, which is just, I can't even hardly believe how old he's getting. But if you think about the fact that as fast as the last 18 years have gone, in another 18 years, I'm going to be in my, you know, early to mid-70s, am I still going to be coming in here, pitching, and doing the things that I'm going to do? And I think the answer to that is yes, but to a much lesser degree, like you and I have talked. But, you know, one of the things I want to start to do is to think about how do I make sure that Sean takes this practice to a place I never even could take it to, because you and I and all the people around here helped prepare him to do that, and that I can look at clients and say, hey, Mr. Client, I've built a practice. You have helped me and allowed me to build a practice that will not only serve you and your wife, but Sean and the next generation are going to take care of the people you love for generations to come. And so my big challenge, I think my greatest passion today is, if you ask me what's my greatest passion today is to say, how do I build that? Because that is my legacy. And, you know, very frankly, you know, it's almost like, you know, biblically when, you know, let's go back, you know, you will appreciate this. You've read the Bible a time or two. You know, when they go back and take David out of the field, we say, okay, you're going to be king someday, and I go back out and watch the sheep. That's what Sean's done. But Sean's now at the place that we need to start thinking about you know, what skills does he need? What does he need to do? How does he become better and grow stronger? And, you know, how does he, how do he and I together learn these new roles that we have? Because I'm going to move into more of a chairman, like CEO. He's going to be, you know, a little less CFO, a little less COO, and a little more CEO, COO, CFO.
Mm-hmm.
So I that's what I'm passionate about.
Okay, Sean, I mean, look, you're the one that has the overview of what's going on. And we don't have time today to discuss this anymore, but I think you guys get together and just put down your thoughts. You know, if you were 100% in charge, how would you organize it? How would you organize Rob? How would you organize Claudia? How would you organize Elvis? Don't think about, you know, pushback from anybody, but organize it in the way that you think it would be best for everybody. How many clients you should have, how many should Rob have, how many Claudia have. And just kind of take a fresh look at it. And then integrating Elvis into it, and Michael, of course, how it should be best run. I mean, why doesn't everybody do that? I mean, on your own, separately, you know, if you were going to organize the team, how would you organize it if you were in charge? Michael, you do it. Everybody's got good intellectual capital and knowledge of the team, but a different perspective. And then come together and have a meeting and, you know, spend a couple hours talking about it and present your ideas. And I know Rob will give you all the ability to run with a good idea. I don't feel he is at all in terms of diminishing your ideas. So I think that would be, from a consultant's point of view, if I could supervise it, it would be great, but I can't. So the best thing for I think is to do this, get together, and then on the next call, tell me what you came up with. Because you guys are in a unique position. You're doing Supernova for a long time, and you're doing it very well, and you're very serious about it. And you're very conscientious. And that's unique. You think, no, everybody does that. No, everybody doesn't do that. They begin to compromise Supernova. They begin to cut out things because they're inconvenient. And so they cut out executive summaries, and they cut out this, and they cut out that. And you guys aren't doing that, and I respect that a lot. That's why I asked you candidly, what is causing these issues? So I think that's what you guys, if you will do that for me as your homework, I think you'll get a lot out of it, and I think it'll be really good for the team. I don't think you need to do the joint. I don't think you need to do joint calls. I mean that's a tremendous inefficiency. But I think you need to talk about each of the calls. So if you want to do a couple joint calls, that's fine. But quite inefficient to be doing 20 joint calls. There's a real cost to that. Okay. Yeah.
All right, good. Hey, Rob, one thing I'll share with you that I read, Rob, I'm going to share something with you the other day. And when I heard it, I thought of Supernova. And what you just said, that brings right in. So when you get pushback from guys, I think this is something that you may want to commit to memory. This guy that I was reading said, common sense you will find is very rarely common practice.
That's really good. Thank you.
All right.
You're very welcome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate the candor. It was a good conversation. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rob.